We're interviewing Luis Alfaro. He's here from East LA. He's going to be performing at Diverse Works, producing or actually performing in his downtown production.
Yeah, that's this right. Is East Montrose also.
Yeah, right. Yeah, it's very trendy.
Very untrendy.
Well, small town trendy, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I like it very much. I'm actually performing in a one-man show I've been touring the country with called Downtown. I wrote it and perform in it. And it's part of a series that they're doing called Beyond Desire, a series of film and performance works. And actually, last week they had Rosa von Praunheim. And they had his films, Virus Knows No Morals, and a few other films. So it's been very exciting to be here.
You're here a little early, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm actually doing a larger project. As part of Beyond Desire, we're doing a project with gay and lesbian teens in Houston. So I'm teaching the first leg of 2 weeks, the first 2 weeks of a series that's going to happen. These kids are going through a process where they'll start with me, and I'm actually getting them to write their stories. I teach playwriting at UCLA in Los Angeles, and also at CalArts, which is a big art school around the country. So they hired me to teach them some writing exercises, and they're going to gather a bunch of material of their own. And then the five lesbian brothers will be here in a few weeks to take them through the performance wing of it. And then they'll end up with Mary Ellen Strom, who is an educator and an artist in New York, who will bring five gay and lesbian teens from New York to work with these teens. So it's a longer process. So it's been very exciting, and I'm also doing a tour of the Houston high schools. So I did that today.
So what are your feelings about young people nowadays?
Well, they're very cynical, I have to say that much. But they're also very exciting. I mean, one of the kids goes to her prom next Friday, and she's going in a taxi taking her girlfriend. I don't think I would have ever done that in my youth. And so it's very promising, you know, they're out and in a good way. So, you know, I'm also dealing with some youth that have some issues around their sexuality and, you know, drugs and prostitution, things of that sort. But it's not any different, I think, than working. I do a prison program with boys in Los Angeles, and it's not really that different. Actually, I find them much more intelligent and much more proud to be who they are. So that makes me very, very excited. Yeah.
Now, the group that you teach writing to, is this specifically gay and lesbians, or is it just anyone who wants to take it?
Right now, it's exclusively gay and lesbian teens from Houston. So we're sort of pulling up our Houston stories right now. So it's very exciting because I'm actually having them write very specific stories about this place, this time. So they're really writing stories about what it means to be growing up in Houston as a gay or lesbian teen. It's a collaboration with two outreach programs. One of them is called Hippie and the other one is called Hatch, but I have no idea what that means. Homosexual, I know, is in there somewhere. Yeah.
And you've also done some writing. I read some of your articles, the Drive-By Chingon?
Chingon. Drive-By Chingon is a Spanish word for like badass, I can't say it, MF. But it's just sort of a Spanish word for sort of somebody who thinks he's really cool. But I write for a newspaper in Los Angeles, and I'm also published in most of the gay rags. I write, you know, I've written some stuff for The Advocate. I just was published last month in Genre. And I do a lot of stuff in the gay rags, a lot of the local gay rags as well. And then I have some books out. I'm really anthologized a lot. So I don't have my own book, but I'm in a lot of anthologies. And last year I was in Men on Men 4, which is like the big, you know, the big one that comes out of, what is that, Random House in New York. So that was kind of fun. And then I have a CD out on New Alliance Records, which was released last month. So I'll probably be back in Houston very soon for that tour as well.
And what's on the CD? Is that just Downtown?
It's a spoken word album, 16 cuts from the full-length Downtown show, which is about an hour and a half. Here in Houston, I'm doing about an hour and 10 because I'm splitting the bill with an artist from San Antonio named David Zamora Casas, who is a well-known sort of folk artist who has the most incredible house I've ever seen in San Antonio. It's a cultural landmark, and it's called the Church of Anti-Oppression is what he calls it, and it's his art studio. And I actually, at every stop, that's one of my sort of gigs, that in every city I go to, I usually perform with the opening act as somebody that's local. So I've performed with, in San Antonio, I performed with Lou Jones, who's a wonderful transgender artist. And every town I just play with somebody else. So it's fun. It's really fun.
How is it different here from the from California?
Well, people are much
tell?
Yeah, well, people are much nicer. I've been on my bicycle. We were just talking about this because this is an
dangerous. Yes,
it's an anti-bicycle
right.
town. But I actually take like lots of, you know, I take Austin all the way up through downtown and hardly anybody, you know, sort of notices me there. But it's, yeah, anti-bicycle town. But people are really friendly. Last night I went to the Alley Theater to see Oleana and, you know, there was a question and answer session afterwards and I found that people were actually very reserved. You know, Los Angeles and Oleana, I mean, it was like an uproar. People were like practically throwing things at the actors. And here I found that people were really reserved and very friendly. You know, I went to a some little party in the plaza thing, it's called, in the middle of downtown, and people were very nice. You know, it's like asking people for directions. Everybody offers directions here. Everybody says hello. I saw a beautiful boy get off the bus, and I thought he was cruising me, but... because that was like the first experience I had here, and he said hi, and I said hi, and then he walked away. And what's going on here? Everybody's friendly. You know, the climate is different too. I mean, it's interesting just going through so many towns. I was in Seattle and Boston, and here it seems to be sort of just more relaxed politically as well. And
Sometimes unfortunate.
Yeah, yeah. I haven't seen anything violent or anything like that, and that's sort of been the norm for this tour. Every time I've gone through, there's been something rather spoken. However, the other day I was riding my bike on San Jacinto, and four men in a car pulled up and pushed me over. So that wasn't too much fun, but I sort of forgave them. But yeah, I like it. I like the towns. I like Houston. I was here 3 years ago for a gay and lesbian performance festival also. So it's kind of neat to be back. Actually, I was here 3 years ago to the day.
Wow.
So I performed, you know.
So you have a piece from your performance.
Mm-hmm. This is a piece called Clarence, and it's a piece about growing up in downtown Los Angeles. And a lot of the show is about... what it means to grow up in an urban environment. And so this is called Clarence. The year we had noon dances, 7th grade, Berendo Junior High. My favorite was watching the basketball team, the Centurions. Long, tall, black guys with droopy sweatpants and no t-shirts. Swinging hips to the righteous sounds of the Reverend when he was just a sexual thing called Al Green. Even before I heard about the Mexican rhythm. Mexican rhythm was a non-stop tango of salsas, rancheras, and cumbias. You could stop in the middle of the dance and not lose the beat, because the beat was in the heart. Mexican beat was born on street corners in downtown L.A., a rhythm hiding in alleys behind Lucy's All Night Tacos and the Habana Bakery. Mexican rhythm was copycat soul train with the switchblade. Mexican rhythm was K-Day before White Hat Soul. Mexican rhythm was running down Broadway and ducking into Woolworths with a ghetto blaster that was too small to show attitude or be stolen. Mexican rhythm was hot nights and gang fights. Mexican rhythm was our drunken fathers talking the native language. I always got jumped in the lunch line before I could buy my grilled cheese sandwich. But the dime I kept in my shoe, the dime I saved for Clarence, 10 cents got me to the gym before Diana Ross's part on My Mistake was to love you, boy, love you, boy. Clarence was always on the dance floor because he was dating Yolanda Skipper, and Yolanda Skipper was Miss Rhythm herself. Mm-hmm. If Clarence would have made it to 9th grade yearbook, he would have had titles like Most Likely to Get Stronger, Most Likely to Beat You Up in the Hallway, A Badass Mother Who Worked Out by Lifting You from the Belt Loop for a Round of 10. But it wasn't the muscles that won me over, it was the hair. Because you see, if you had an afro as big as Clarence, that means you stood up to your mama and whooped your daddy's butt when he grabbed you by the ear, tried to drag you down to the barber. I, of course, was almost bald. But when he grabbed me and pushed me away with the chump, move your butt, you hogging up all of the dance floor, a kind of electricity raced through me. Because one strong shove fueled 100 fantasies to be used under a bedsheet quietly. Later in the gym, I imagined I was his basketball, and he grabbed me and he caressed me and he ran with me like I was a part of him, a part of his body. When he paraded around the locker room in his jock strap, you could see faint traces of pubic hair rising right above the elastic waistband. But I couldn't stare too long, because it's almost like staring too long at a picture of Christ on the cross. People think you're strange. Clarence died in the ninth grade, and he left behind Yolanda Skipper and the Centurions, and he left me with the memory of one strong shove. It gets me by, even now.
It's great.
Thank you.
Is that also on the spoken word CD, or is that just...
Yeah, that's also on the spoken word CD. It's a challenge because most of my work is about the intersection of nationality and sexuality. And, you know, a lot of people come up to me after my shows and they say, I can take you doing the religious stuff and the Latino stuff on one side, and I can take you doing the gay stuff on the other side. But when you mix those together, that's like combustible, you know?
Really?
Yeah, I think that that's very hard for people. I was raised a strict Catholic. I was an altar boy. I was a Boy Scout, which I call, you know, probably the greatest gay club I was into. That's where I learned how to French kiss, you know, Boy Scouts. But it's so funny because, you know, people have a hard time with, they have a really hard time with when you mix those two up because you're mixing up, you know, family stuff and your history. But my history has always been that intersection, you know. What does it mean to be gay and what does it mean to be a man of color in this society? And you're dealing with issues of race and you're dealing with all those issues.
Are you very close to your family?
Mm-hmm.
And I think probably a lot of Caucasians
mm-hmm.
would maybe move away, you know. Like
yeah.
I did.
Well, there's a myth.
You know?
I chair a committee right now in Los Angeles called the Gay Men of Color Consortium. We do AIDS work. I run an AIDS agency in Los Angeles. And one of the most interesting sort of things that's emerged from this group is that we find that most of the gay white men in our community go to live, like, let's say, in West Hollywood, which was a gay-perceived city. But most of the gay men of color actually stay in the neighborhoods mm-hmm. they grew up in. They still live at home, and they don't openly identify as gay. They'll maybe identify as men who have sex with men. So there's issues around that, and that's why we're probably the highest incident rate for HIV right now, because there's a lot of sort of screwing around your wife, la, 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 la. And it goes around. There's a lot of societal and religious pressure put on a gay man of color around those issues. So it becomes very interesting and very complex, you know, the way the whole thing works. But I do find that a lot of people move out of their communities. But actually, I think the issue might be more economic and more mm-hmm. about class, is that a lot of gay men of color cannot move out of their communities. They wouldn't be able to afford that kind of lifestyle. So, yeah, it becomes very interesting.
Great. Now, you're going to be at the Verse Works next Friday and Saturday, the mm-hmm. 20th and 21st at 8 p.m. And we're talking with Louis Alfaro from East L.A., here in East Montrose. It's great what you're doing, teaching the younger people about...
Very excited. It's going very well, and the kids seem to be, they're extraordinary, and they all have, everybody, once you figure out how to get people to tell their story, you find that the stories of America, especially gay and lesbian teens, are so complex and so incredibly compelling. And you know, I can understand why we have high suicide rates and all that stuff, but I also can understand why we have another generation, and I hate that it's called Generation X because I think it's a very positive generation.
Great. Okay, well, we're looking forward to seeing you next week.